Hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Wisconsin is now in session. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Good morning. We're delighted to welcome with us this morning students from Hustaford High School. Would they please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. The students are here with us this morning on a national award-winning program that is sponsored by the Supreme Court and the State Bar of Wisconsin. High schools across this state have been invited to send students to oral arguments. When they accept the invitation, the students get the briefs to the case we're about to hear and to do extra work on these cases. Come here, listen to oral argument, and then at noon, after our second case of the day, they will meet with a justice of this court to discuss the procedures of the court, and everyone is invited to attend that session. It's not limited to the students. And today, the noon presentation will be made by Justice Patience Robensack, who sits on the far left of this bench. And why don't I introduce the rest of the court at this time? And next to Justice Robensack is Justice David Prosser. And to my immediate left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. And I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. And to my right is Justice John Wilcox. And to his right, Justice Patrick Crooks. And on the far right, Justice Diane Sykes. With those introductions made, we'll call our first case for the morning, 02-1166, Wisconsin Citizens Concern for Cranes and Doves et al. Versus the DNR. And arguing on behalf of the Wisconsin Citizens is Attorney George B. Strugga IV. And are you ready, counsel? Right. Let me just say on the Assistant Attorney General, Mr. Peterson, will argue 20 minutes. Representing the DNR, Attorney Beth Hannon, representing the U.S. Sportsmen's Alliance, has 10 minutes, and then Mr. Strother has 5 minutes in rebuttal. Is that correct? Okay. Fine. I'd move the microphone up a bit, yes. We're in the process of redoing the sound system, so you'll have to excuse us if your voice does not come through, and if we have to stop you at some point. You have to turn it on. Is he on?
Quarter on.
That's fine.
I'll do my best. I have sort of a chronic cough, so I'll try to. I hope you'll excuse me if I have to cough occasionally, but let me start. Members of the court, good morning. May it please the court, my name is George Strother. Most people know me as Guard Strother. I represent the petitioner, Wisconsin Citizens Concern for Cranes and Doves, and John Winicky and Pat Fisher. With me at council table also is my colleague Rose Yonke. This case is broadly about the extent of the authority delegated to the Department of Natural Resources by the state legislature to enact rules to regulate the traditional sport of hunting. More narrowly, of course, it's about the DNR's authority to allow hunting of particular species, in this case, the mourning dove. It is purely a legal issue, and the parties, I think it's fair to say, have agreed from the very beginning at the trial court that it is purely a legal issue. It is not about whether it is good social or environmental policy to allow the hunting of mourning doves. It is not about those who like to hunt versus those who think that hunting is somehow not a good thing. I think at times it's been cast that way. That is not what this case is about. To my surprise, or somewhat to my surprise, the case has given birth to a significant collateral issue, a two-pronged issue relating to the standard of review to be applied and relating to the question of whether there's any particular burden of proof or persuasion in the case. The issues are quite closely related in our view. Concerned citizens, and I'll refer to my client as concerned citizens believes that the Court of Appeals has applied incorrect standards, an incorrect standard as to the scope of, or the standard of review, and an unprecedented standard as to the burden of proof or persuasion. First, let me acknowledge that the Court of Appeals quite clearly did in its decision state that it's a case of de novo review, and we agree with that. It's a case of de novo review because the case goes to the scope of authority of the DNR, the administrative agency in this case. We also acknowledge that the Court of Appeals quite correctly indicated in its decision that it would review, in this case, review the regulation of the DNR independently. What we find wanting in the Court of Appeals decision is the failure of the Court of Appeals to acknowledge wholeheartedly that it is a case where no deference whatsoever is owed to the decision of the administrative agency to enact this rule.
Counsel, I just want to ask a question, and I agree with what you're saying. This is purely a legal issue, but there was a question, and now it's there was this recent amendment to the Wisconsin Constitution about dealing with hunting. Are you implying that that would have no impact on this decision at all, or should have no impact on what decision this Court makes?
Let me answer the question by saying, first, I think that the regulatory scheme under Chapter 29 is generally harmonious with the constitutional amendment. And in that sense, I think the amendment has no impact. In other words, we're not faced with a situation where we would be looking to decide perhaps that the regulatory scheme was not in keeping with the constitutional requirement.
The theory then is that it's a reasonable regulation if they have the authority.
Exactly, yes. And secondarily, I would say that there are nonetheless some clues in the constitutional amendment which help us decipher the puzzle in this case, and that stems from the fact that the constitutional amendment refers to taking as distinguished from hunting, and because the constitutional amendment appears to refer to the term game in a sort of traditional sense of the birds, animals, fish that are traditionally thought of as being subject to the pursuit of sportsmen when hunting, fishing, and the like. And in that sense, I think we perhaps can look to the constitutional amendment to get some clue as to what the intent of the legislature was some years earlier in enacting Chapter 29.
Can I take you back to your point on deference for a minute?
Yes, sir.
I was somewhat puzzled by Judge Deininger's opinion, the Court of Appeals opinion, when he was indicating it's a de novo review and yet was indicating that some deference is required under the circumstances. What's your position on that?
Well, I would say, in short, we read the decision as you did, apparently, Judge, and that we were puzzled, too. We think that Judge Deininger's decision, and for the Court of Appeals, of course, did, in fact, accord some degree of deference to the Department of Natural Resources. He doesn't say that there's no deference whatsoever. He simply says there's not the degree of deference which is owed in a case involving a finding of fact or a mixed question of fact and law.
And he says that they're going to derive, quote, benefit and cites to paragraphs 25 to 27 of Sider v. O'Connell.
Yes. And
does Sider v. O'Connell use the word benefit?
Yes, it does. And there is precedent, particularly Sider v. O'Connell and I believe the Lisney case, which refer to the court deriving benefit even though there is no deference owed, it's de novo review, and the court independently examines and determines the meaning of the statute and the legislative intent. It was our reading that the Court of Appeals decision in this case was, in a sense, significant, like Conan Doyle's Hound of the Baskervilles, which didn't bark in the night. It was significant for what it didn't say, and what it didn't say was we owe absolutely no deference to the administrative agency. And so we read it to say that giving the DNR the benefit of its experience and expertise is in fact a degree of deference, and that the most established line of cases going back to Groft, DeBeck, Harnischweger say no deference whatsoever. Well, that really takes me, that question took me right along my outline, and it takes me to my next point, which was that the Court of Appeals appears to have, and we read the decision to do this, to have put the concerned citizens to a burden of proof, which in our reading of the precedents does not in fact exist. Quite clearly, the Court of Appeals says in its decision that it was concerned citizens' burden to convince us that the DNR lacked the authority to enact the regulation in question. There is, in our reading of the cases, no such burden. There's no precedent for such burden. The only burden that we find in the cases, well, there are really two things. First, we look to the reviewing statute, which is Section 227.40 of the statutes, which imposes no burden on any party except the party moving for review, and that's a burden simply to show that the party has standing. Beyond that, there is no burden imposed by the statute. If we look then to the cases, the burden that we find is the one that was announced in the dissent to the Court of Appeals decision in Maple Leaf Farms, which is the burden of showing the particular exercise of authority is in keeping with the legislative intent beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, if anything, it seems to us that that burden would fall on the agency. If the grant of authority won't be found unless it's clear beyond a reasonable doubt, it seems to us that that's a burden that falls to the agency, not the party moving for review. Other than that,
Counsel?
Yes.
If I may, doesn't 227.40 sub 3 provide that in a judicial proceeding in which the invalidity of a rule is material to the cause of action or any defense thereto, the assertion of such invalidity shall be set forth in the pleading of a party so maintaining? Doesn't that put the burden on you?
I disagree respectfully, Your Honor. I believe that that's a very limited requirement which pertains solely to the pleading and not to the issue of, shall we call it, proof. Obviously, in a case of law, there's not a factual proof, but not to the prime issue in the case. I think that's just a more limited pleading requirement in our reading. Beyond the burden that's established in Maple Leaf Farms, the beyond a reasonable doubt burden, it seems to me that the burden really falls on the reviewing court to determine in an absolute sense what the law is or is not, not on either party, really, in the case. It would be poor judicial and social policy to require otherwise if we were to be deciding issues like the absolute meaning and validity of laws based upon whether one party in some sense carried a burden or made the best argument. We would not be getting to the crux of the matter, which is legislative intent, and our sense is that that would not be good policy. Passing from this collateral issue, we move to the rule itself. And the rule, the issue relating to the rule itself, of course, is whether it comports with the legislature's grant of authority. First question is whether or not the statute is ambiguous. We've briefed this over and over and argued it many times. Ambiguity in Section 29014 and 29133 are the crux of the matter. The standard of review is whether or not reasonable minds might differ as to the meaning of the statute. And it's our position, and I could give you the numerous briefs and other submissions in the case and say reasonable minds have indeed differed, and we have many reasonable minds, and I refer to the judges that have considered the case, and I certainly refer to my opposing counsel. The statute is confusing. It is inconsistent. If we look just at the delegation of authority in 29014, if we look just at the definition of game, we haven't looked far enough. If we look only there, one certainly could say that we have a definition which can be applied and which can give a meaningful interpretation to 29.014. But it's our reading of the cases that the rules of statutory construction require that in determining ambiguity, one has to look at the statute in question, the portion of the statute in question, in the entire context and in conjunction with other statutes of a similar nature or relating to similar subject. And what we have urged on the court all along is that there's a need to look at the definition of game in the context of Chapter 29, which has many other definitions, including particularly the definition of non-game species. And that when that is done, we may have a comprehensive regulatory scheme, but what we do not have is a harmonious regulatory scheme.
Counsel,
yes, sir.
In that area, and just and I couldn't agree with you more that this is we're going to try to look at what reasonable people, reasonable minds. This is a question in this area, and I think it's clear that doves are not part of what falls under the enumeration of a game bird. However, I note that the DNR does have seasons for species that do not fall in the game bird category. In other words, I'm going to say starlings or whatever. you understand what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, yes.
How does this fit in? If they're allowed to regulate those, how does this differ?
This differs because the legislature has not only has the legislature not included doves in the game bird category. Obviously, the game definition is broad and seems to encompass every type of bird that exists.
Yeah, and there's no question that a dove is a wild bird because there is that
yes.
definition.
Yes, and we don't dispute that. But what's different in this case is that the legislature has taken the dove and it has accorded it special status, and I say special status not uniquely, but along with other birds, by making that bird a non-game species. The definition of non-game species is that those species are ones which are not game birds, not in the game bird category. And then what the legislature has done is to take those non-game species and give the DNR special instructions about how to deal with those particular species.
And that's what I was getting at, is that they do have seasons for the wild birds but non-game species. That's what I'm talking about. In other words, without any direction that they have taken upon themselves, do we use that as any pointer for making our decision here as far as what they have done in the past?
Well, I think not particularly as it pertains to the mourning dove, in part because of the history of how the legislature has treated the mourning dove, removing it specifically from the definition of game birds in 1971, I believe it was. And that signals a special intent with regard to the mourning dove that we don't necessarily have with regard to other species which may be considered nuisance species, for example.
Suppose the DNR decided to have a hunting season for cardinals or robins. They're wild birds, aren't they?
They are indeed.
Would they have the authority to do that?
Well, I think if we accept the interpretation of the 29.014 that the DNR urges upon the court, they would have that authority.
They can have open season on any wild animal.
Any wild animal.
That's the seasons, right?
Yes, any wild animal that isn't that isn't protected under, for example, the migratory bird treaties or acts, that doesn't receive some special protection somewhere else. And in fact, that's one of the things that we find incongruous about the DNR's interpretation is that sort of absurd result that one could theoretically get to under their interpretation.
Well, counsel,
yes.
If I may, look at sub 33, because that's a major focus of our inquiry in this case, and that defines game, and it's as follows. Game includes all varieties of wild mammals or birds. When I first read that, I thought, well, that's wide open. Game includes all variety of birds. What's wrong with that interpretation? Why does it have to be a wild bird?
Why does it have to be a wild
bird? You seem to be suggesting that in 33 that the adjective wild, which modifies mammals, also modifies birds. And why is that? I don't know if that's right.
Well, I don't know for sure that that's right, but that's our reading. That's the reading that makes sense.
I mean, if I were a basketball coach and I said to a group of sophomores in high school, and I said, okay, I want on my team tall girls and boys, or tall girls or boys, does that mean the boys have to be tall too?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, one can obviously apply the adjective either expansively or narrowly.
So,
but I would point you, Judge, to Section 29.011, which is the provision of Chapter 29, which says that it is title to all wild animals in the state that vests in the people of the state. And so it seems to me that that signals that this statute is about wild animals, and wild animals does include birds in the definition under 229.001, subsection 90.
Subsection what?
That's subsection 90 of 29.001, where wild...
That doesn't answer, I don't think. I mean, it makes an argument. Wild animal means any mammal, bird, or fish.
But we're dealing with game.
But game includes all varieties of wild mammals. I just look at the words.
Yes.
Wild mammals, or, it doesn't say, or wild birds, you know, or birds. So I think game includes all birds. So.
And Judge, I would have to agree with you that if we look just at that definition, it does appear to include all birds. And one certainly could argue that that means birds which are not necessarily wild birds. I mean, that would not be an illogical reading at all. I think in light of other provisions in the statute, we can divine that it doesn't really mean all birds, it means wild birds, but looking just at the definition of game, a reasonable person could draw the conclusion that you argue.
Well, now 29.011 says legal title to all wild animals, which is broadly defined, is vested in the state. And for purposes of regulating use, disposition, and conservation. Does that mean that the DNR has authority over all wild animals?
I don't think that we can read that statute to say that the DNR has that authority. I think it is a...
Does the state have the authority?
The state has the authority.
Yeah, but hasn't the state delegated that authority to the DNR?
It has delegated that authority to the DNR, but in a selective way in our reading of the statute.
In a selective way? Well,
yes.
Explain.
Well, if we go back to the provision on non-game species, 29.039, we read that section very differently than did the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals equated hunting and taking in... giving us an interpretation of that section. But if we look at the definition of hunting, they're not equated. Taking is a subset of hunting, but hunting is a very expansive definition. It includes shooting, shooting at, pursuing, taking, capturing, killing.
What your definition of taking? See, it's under hunting, so taking means what?
Taking means something other than shooting, shooting at, killing, or attempting to kill. In our reading of the statute, taking means some sort of capturing or taking under control, but without a killing, shooting as in the traditional sense of a hunter shooting with a gun. It means something much less than this broad definition of hunting, and something different from killing or shooting at. And I think that the new constitutional amendment bears that out, because the new constitutional amendment also distinguishes hunting from taking.
And that's why I asked the question.
Yes.
The outset on the constitutional amendment and its definition.
Yes, thank you. It appears my time is up, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilman. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
B. Philip Peterson, Assistant Attorney General, representing the Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Chief Justice Abrahamson. And may it please the Court, representing the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, commonly referred to as DNR, I'm Assistant Attorney General Philip Peterson. Let me preface my argument by just saying that, as Chief Justice Abrahamson has indicated, we've split our time. Beth Hannon, who represents the Sport Alliance Foundation, will be speaking after me, and her prepared remarks, at least, are about the constitutional amendment, and my prepared remarks focus on the statutory authority for the dove hunting season. The central issue here is whether the legislature has delegated has given the DNR authority to set a season for the mourning dove. That question can be answered by looking at just several statutes. Under Wisconsin statute section 29.014, DNR may set a season for game. And game is broadly defined by section 29.001, parent 33, to include all wild birds. So because mourning doves are a wild bird, DNR has clear and express statutory authority to set a hunting season for mourning doves. And the case is just that clear. Nothing elsewhere in the statutes conflicts.
Counsel?
Yes.
You obviously heard my question to your opposing counsel, and I note that you add to the word birds, wild birds.
Yes.
Where does it say wild birds in sub 33?
Well, I think we've read it. I believe the state has applied that over the years to apply to wild mammals and wild birds, even though wild is associated more directly with mammals.
Part of your argument, as I understand it, is, look, you start with 29.014, you look for the definition of game, and 33, you need go no further. Now, your opposing counsel goes and argues further, if you will, in looking at other things, and you do in rebutting it. But that's your argument. You need go no further. So if we're just going to stop at 33, tell me where the word wild is before it modifies birds, if we're not looking at anything else but the plain language or the language of that statute.
Well, Your Honor, for purposes of our point here, I'm not sure it would matter. We believe it applies, that wild birds, that wild applies is a adjective that modifies both mammals and birds. But even if it did not, it would be expansive. It would then say all varieties of birds. And
right. Why doesn't it say that? All varieties of birds. That's the way I read it.
Well, even if you do read it that way, I don't think that changes the result for which we argue in the case.
It may not change the result, but it changes the interpretation. And isn't that what we're here about today, statutory interpretation, what this statute means?
Yes, Your Honor, but we're here to interpret statutes that have an application where it matters to decide this case. And I would think if one takes the position that birds is not modified by wild, that would not change the result for which we argue.
No, I know that it wouldn't change your result. You win. but it changes the interpretation. And part of your argument advanced here, I mean, you'd win the result, but you'd lose the argument in that. Your argument is that 33 is clear. It's totally unambiguous. And I'm just asking you, much like my hypothetical of tall girls or boys. To me, that's unclear whether or not those boys have to be tall. Same thing going on here. An adjective that modifies a noun, then you have a connecting word that's disjunctive with another noun. How do you know?
Well, Justice Bradley, I think my response is that it's not ambiguous with respect to this case. It may be ambiguous on that point with respect to another case, but with respect to this case, the word game would include the mourning dove, whether or not the adjective wild is associated with bird.
Yeah, you would win in result, but lose in your argument that it is unambiguous.
Well, I respectfully, I don't mean just to belabor the point, but I think If a statute is ambiguous, it has to be ambiguous with respect to what it's being applied to and where it has its application. And here, even if there is that ambiguity that you identify, that would not be significant for purposes of the issue that this case presents. And Justice Bradley has captured, I think, our position in the case. It is that you need only look at these two provisions to decide this case. But even if you go elsewhere in the statutes, nothing elsewhere in the statutes conflicts with this season-setting authority that the legislature has so clearly and expressly given DNR. And under the law of statutory interpretation, the Court should not look for conflict, but it should look instead for harmony among all of the related statutes. And when that's done here, the result is clear. There's not the ambiguity that the other side argues for. There is ambiguity in the definition section. We would concede that ambiguity is not the right word, but the lack of consistency, a lack of uniformity in those definitions. Wisconsin Statute Section 29.001 is entitled Definitions, and it gives the statutory definitions that are used in Chapter 29. In its introductory language, it says that the words listed here, unless the context requires something else, shall have the meaning that's given there. And but nothing there nor nothing in statutory construction requires that every one of those definitions have a consistent definition, be consistent one with the other, when looked at more broadly. For example, the same species, we concede this, and it's true in our brief, that the same species may at the same time be both game and a non-game species. That can be the same species. In fact, the mourning dove falls within the definition of game as defined in 29.001, parent 33, and it also falls within the definition of non-game species in 29.001, parent 60. But that's not a ambiguity or a problem that the Court needs to deal with. We cite a case in our brief. It's the Isaac J.R. case, which holds just as I've indicated here. So because these statutes are so clear, legislative history need not be reviewed. But nonetheless, even though that's so, if one goes and looks at the legislative history as we've traced in our brief, and if you do that just as an alternative argument, it's another argument that supports our position, that further supports DNR's authority to set an open season for the mourning dove. The legislative history shows that DNR or its predecessor agency before it has had season-setting authority for wild birds since 1933. So for over 70 years, DNR or its predecessor agency has had the same broad season-setting authority for all birds since 1933.
Of what import is it that in 1971 the mourning dove, which previously had been listed as a game bird, was removed? Of what import is that?
Well, that accomplished nothing with respect to this case. There were those at the time in the legislature, perhaps, who had that as an objective, but the votes were not there. And there's nothing that links what was done in 1971 to any change in the authority that the DNR has to set a season. The word that was changed is game birds. The definition of game birds was changed by deleting mourning doves from that definition. Also, in 1971, the mourning dove was made the state symbol of peace. And so the concerned citizens argues that it could not be that the legislature would have done this, would have delisted the mourning dove from the game bird's definition and would have made it the state symbol of peace and still at the same time intended that DNR have authority to set a hunting season for mourning doves. But there's no link between...
Please finish.
There's no link between what the legislature did then and the authority that it so plainly and clearly has to set seasons for game, which includes the dog.
I think it's the Legislative Reference Bureau had in their file on this legislation a Green Bay Press Gazette editorial dated November 18, 1971, which was an editorial about the removing of the dove and the initiative of Ruben Lefebvre of Oconto in bringing that about, removing it from the list. And it said, in talking about the legislature, this new statute pushed through with comparative ease after a decade of hemming and hawing that will at last put the popular and appealing mourning dove on the legal list of songbirds and thus ensure it against the shot and shell of hunters. At least this in the draft file suggests that the intent in the removal was to keep it from the shot and shell of hunters. Of what import is that to your analysis?
Well, there were many who had that view, but that was not the majority in the legislature, and there's no link. There's no link. There's the clear language that we've identified that gives the authority to DNR to set a season on this species. But there's no link between what the legislature did in 1971. It's delisting the mourning dove from the game bird's definition, and it's making it the state symbol of peace. There's no link between that and the result that you identify. The result that's described in the news account or news editorial.
There is no link.
Well, there's no statutory link. The legislature, when it makes that link, knows exactly how to do it. It's done it in other circumstances. In 29.604, which is the Endangered and Threatened Species Statute, the legislature has very expressly and clearly said that that species that the DNR has identified as endangered and threatened may not be taken. And so if that were its intention with respect to the mourning dove in 1971, it would have done that, drawn that link between what it did and whether or not the species can be hunted.
Now, 29.039, which deals with non-game. Now, we agree that, do we not, that game includes the doves, the word game in the statute.
Yes, okay. Judge. Yes, Chief Justice.
And we agree, do we not, that non-game species includes the doves?
Yes.
Okay. So your argument is the doves are covered under 29014 and the department can maintain open and closed seasons, et cetera. Now, 29.039 also regulates the doves because we've just said it's a non-game species. And there the department may conduct investigations of non-game species, that's the doves, to develop scientific information, et cetera. That's sentence one. Sentence two, the department may develop conservation programs to ensure perpetuation, that's number of doves. And number three, the department may require harvest information and establish limitations relating to taking possession, et cetera. What does the third, all of which I read you, covers the doves, right?
Yes, it,
a non-game species.
It does. It applies.
So the argument is, on the one hand, under 29.014, you can establish seasons. That covers doves. On the other hand, 29.039 seems to have less, the department has less power, it's arguable, over the doves. And that's where the tension comes in, if you accept what I have just said. Do you agree?
I don't agree that there's any tension. 29.014 gives clear, express authority to set a season. There's nothing in 29.039 that bars or prevents the DNR from setting a season for mourning doves. In fact, it doesn't. One would not need to go any further than that. That's the end of the required analysis to determine whether there's authority to set a season. But if one goes on and looks at 29.039, particularly the third sentence that you identified, Chief Justice, that would give the DNR also authority to allow a harvest to take and et cetera, as the statute reads.
Then you have to read harvest to mean the same as hunting, or taking the means as hunting, or one of the other languages to be hunting.
Yes.
And that's what you're doing.
Yes, we are, and I believe there's authority for doing that. There is in one can't read one in reading chapter 29. There are a number of places where the word take is used, and it's used in a way that's consistent with hunting, that would include hunting. First of all, there's the definition of hunting that has already been mentioned here that does include taking. But in addition to that, beyond that, the way the word is used, I think even opposing counsel would agree that 29.604, parent 4, parent A, which is the Endangered and Threatened Species Act, which bars taking. It only uses taking. It doesn't use hunting. And so if the argument that opposing counsel makes were correct, that would not be an absolute bar to the taking, the hunting, the taking in, of those of endangered species, and plainly that is not what is meant by that statute. Also, 29.014, parent 1, as the Court of Appeals decision points out, the word taking is used there in a way that needs to include more than something that it's used in a way that needs to include hunting. And then the DNR in its protected list, in its own rule, to the extent that has some value, taking is used in a way that would, where there are protected animals, the language is, they cannot be taken, and it's not any more elaboration on it. That's Wisconsin Administrative Code, section NR 10.02, in the introductory portion of that provision.
Counsel, you began your comments with saying you were going to let your co-counsel, I'll use that term loosely, take the constitutional issue. When I read your brief and I saw that the constitutional issue that you dealt with was only 2 pages long, I kind of thought, well, maybe you don't think much of the constitutional issue in your long brief dedicating only 2 pages to it. Do you think the Constitution expands the rights beyond the statutory rights?
We don't believe that the constitutional amendment has any particular significance in this case. Nothing in
thought by 2 pages.
Thank you. I think you drew the correct conclusion. Nothing there conflicts with.
Just let me interrupt. The reason I asked the question on the Constitution was basically because of the definition that of taking, which was the constitutional amendment applies to the hunting. That is, that's the reason it's there. And so it's a synonymous, you know, it's a synonym, hunting, taking, and that's why I wanted some discussion on it.
Yes, I understand. Well, we don't believe that the analysis the other side has used of the constitutional amendment and the terms in it and the provisions in it have any direct application to the statutory authority questions that are discussed elsewhere in our brief. Those terms there are defined in Chapter 29. So there's no need to go to the constitutional amendment, go through some sort of analysis of the terms there and then attempt
Counsel,
to...
Counsel, in answer to my question then,
yes.
Do you think the Constitution argument has any... The constitutional amendment has any bearing on this argument here today, other than to refute the argument of your opposing counsel?
Well, if anything, it adds to the strength of our position because it can be. If anything, the large dove population that we've identified in our brief, the high annual death rate from non-hunting causes, the rapid and abundant reproduction, the low number and low percentage of doves that would be taken in any hunt, it's a very small portion of the population, that DNR could, in order to reject a hunting request, DNR has to have some reasonable basis for doing so. The restrictions that the constitutional amendment allows have to be reasonable restrictions. And in the face of what's known about the mourning dove, DNR, at least arguably, could not take the position that it's reasonable to restrict, prevent the hunt of this species.
Maybe this is the way that I saw your brief, that the constitutional amendment really doesn't have any application here, number one. Number two, your opposing counsel's attempt to have it support his position doesn't work. And number three, if it has any application, if anything, it would support our position. Am I correctly summarizing your position on the constitutional issue?
Justice Bailey, I noticed the red light is on, but the answer to your question is yes, you've accurately described and summarized our position.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hannon, representing U.S. Sportsman Alliance Foundation.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I do represent the U.S. Sportsman's Alliance Foundation, which is an intervener respondent in this case. Last year, the people of Wisconsin came together to do something they seldom do, and that is to amend their constitution. They amended it to preserve something they've been doing since before Wisconsin was a state, and that is the right to hunt, fish, trap, and take game. I understand and agree with counsel for the DNR's position that if anything, the passage of this constitutional amendment bolsters the statutory interpretation argument that we present. What this case is not about is an unreasonable restriction. I don't take the citizens' claim to be a constitutional challenge, and a reasonable restriction constitutional challenge would be the reverse of what we have here, that the dove season wasn't long enough based on population numbers of doves, opportunity to hunt, or the bag limit was too low. It's that kind of thing. If the court wishes, because it asked in its order granting review of this case, to engage in some interpretation of the amendment, you would do so looking first at the plain words of the amendment. You would look at the constitutional debate and the practices in effect at the time of the amendment, during the whole amendment process, and if there were any legislative enactments shortly thereafter dealing with the constitutional amendment, which there have not been. We submit that both the plain language, common and ordinary meaning of the terms in the amendment, as well as the debates that were going on at the time the amendment was enacted, support the legislative grant of authority to the DNR to enact the rule establishing an open season for mourning doves.
Before you move off the constitutional argument, I want to follow up on that. I don't disagree with anything that you've said about what sort of a claim this is and what sort of analysis applies. I think you've correctly stated it. But the constitutional amendment that was adopted last year on the right to hunt does tell us something about a fundamental premise, it seems to me,
of the petitioner's argument here, which is that if the DNR doesn't have the statutory authority to regulate a dove hunt, then dove hunting must be illegal. That seems to me to be the premise of the argument, and I don't see anything in the statutes or the administrative code that says dove hunting is illegal for any particular reason. And it seems to me that prior to the adoption of the right to hunt constitutional amendment, there was at common law essentially a right, that may be too strong a word, but that the people enjoyed the privilege or right to hunt game in the state of Wisconsin at common law pursuant to the Nurgard case, and that what the constitutional amendment did was secure that right in explicitly in the Constitution.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is our view, that it secures the open right subject only to reasonable restriction and not the converse.
The Nurgard case says that
I can read it.
In the legislation, the citizen may doubtless pursue, take, and dispose of fish and game as he sees fit and without restraint, so long as he violates no private rights. And then goes on to say, if the state steps in and somehow restricts that, and there isn't any statute or DNR regulation that says thou shalt not hunt doves.
No, there isn't, and we certainly agree with the plain language interpretation argument, particularly of 29.14, allowing DNR to set seasons for game, and that the mourning dove is within the definition of game.
So even if we were to say that the DNR doesn't have the authority under the enabling statute, 29.14, to set a dove hunt open and closed seasons, the right to hunt doves would pre-exist?
It would pre-exist.
In an unfettered way?
Yes, and then you'd have to consider, are we asking for some unreasonable restriction? And there's not.
Is there an unfettered right to hunt robin?
Robin fit under the definition of game. And so at this point, there would be, although to my knowledge, the DNR has not done anything to set regulation for that.
Right. Under the question and answer you just engaged in, I think you acknowledge that under that interpretation, there's the unfettered right to hunt robin. Is that your argument in the state?
Well, then we could get into reasonable restrictions.
But that's your argument, because there's nothing that says thou shalt hunt robin or thou shalt not hunt robin. And I think your argument is, in the absence of restrictions that are reasonable, it's unfettered. And I just want to know, when I go back to Wausau this weekend, if I can go hunting robin.
What about the federal law on migratory birds, which prohibits that?
Excuse me. Right. There is the federal law on migratory birds, as well as the rule on unprotected wild animals. I'm sorry, and the answer to your question, Justice Bradley, is under NR 1002, is that robins are protected under sub 8, which would be any other wild bird not specified in this chapter. 10.02 sub 8.
That puts my heart at rest.
And I think it might answer your question.
Cardinals are protected too.
I believe they are as not being otherwise limited, yes, addressed in the chapter.
Okay, so just so we're having a little...
Sorry.
Well, songbirds, since I... bluebirds, songbirds are protected under that same DNR regulation, is that correct?
Well, first of all, Jessica Wilcox, I think I'll clarify that there's not a DNR list of songbirds, for instance. I think, you know, the common person might refer to a bird based on its characteristics
well,
as a songbird. But
yeah, the argument here is what's next? What are we going to do next? And I just wanted to know just what the regulations are.
Right, and it would fall under the protected any other wild bird not specified. And so you go to that chapter.
Read it to us.
I don't have that in front of me. Could you read that?
It's chapter NR 10.02. I'll hold this. Protected wild animals. The following wild animals are designated protected. No person may take, attempt to take, transport, or possess any protected wild animal at any time unless expressly authorized by the department. There are a number of subsections within that rule that identify certain species. Sub 8, any other wild bird not specified in this chapter.
Does that include doves?
The doves are within Chapter 10, subject to the rule that establishes the hunting.
So they could take, the only way they could take a bird out of there is to do like they have with the mourning dove, is that?
To go through the rulemaking process, the hearing process, right, which happened in this instance, Your Honor. I would also perhaps go back to a question that Justice Bradley had about what's the effect of what happened in 1971 and reference the Green Bay Press Gazette article that referred to doves as songbirds. And I would point you to part of the legislative history. There was an earlier effort, I believe in 1963, to somehow change the status of mourning doves using the word songbird, and that was eliminated. And so I think by the time we get to 1971, that reflects no intent to designate them as a songbird. There were two separate acts, this designation of a symbol of peace and then recategorizing them from game birds to the non-game species for the purposes of the non-game species program within the DNR, which has to do with funding for different studies, including harvesting studies, but the other items mentioned in that subsection, whereas licensing fees fund other studies for the game fish, game birds. And so it was a funding distinction. All right.
Excuse
Thank
me,
you.
Ms. Hannon,
yeah.
Your time is up. If you'd like to summarize in a sentence, please.
The constitutional amendment only reaffirms the appropriateness of the legislature's of the rule that the DNR enacted subject to its authority from the legislature.
I'm sorry, Chief, may I ask just one quick question?
Sure.
And just in your summation, only reaffirms, I get the impression from your use of the language that you kind of take the position that the DNR did in with regard to the application, that is, that it really doesn't shed light on the inquiry of the DNR authorities. But if it does, it supports it. Am I wrong or right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hannon. Mr. Strother, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to correct a statement, and I use the word advisedly, but correct a statement made by Ms. Hannon. She indicated that there was no other legislation passed by our legislature at or about the time of the constitutional amendment, which might shed some light on what the legislature meant in drafting that amendment and putting it out for the people to consider. In fact, there was, and we pointed it out in our brief, there was the Captive Wildlife Act, Chapter 169, in which the legislature defined the word take. And the legislature in 69, I believe it was 69.01 sub 34, defined the word take as follows. Take means to capture, but does not include killing. I think.
But, Counselor, doesn't that section on definitions begin with the preamble and say they apply only to that chapter?
I don't disagree with that. They do apply only to that chapter, but.
And we're interpreting a different chapter of the statutes for the authority that is or is not present.
Actually, the point I want to make is that we're trying to interpret what the legislature meant in the constitutional amendment. And I believe that it is an accepted rule of construction that the court considers any legislation which was roughly contemporaneous with the creation of a constitution or passage of a constitutional amendment in construing that constitutional amendment. And so what I'm suggesting here is that this contemporaneous legislation helps us to understand the definitions of or what the legislature intended by the terms which were used in the constitutional amendment, which differentiates hunting from taking.
But the DNR is not arguing to us today that they have the authority they exercise by virtue of the constitutional amendment. They're really arguing they have statutory authority, correct?
You're absolutely right about that.
Our definitions have to focus on Chapter 29 if we're to decide whether they do or do not have that statutory authority, correct?
Yes. You're right. You're absolutely right. I'm just trying to take the constitutional amendment then and then try to divine what significance it may have in terms of an understanding or interpretation of Chapter 29. And what we see here is that the section on non-game species, 29.039, doesn't use the word hunting or killing, or it uses the word taking. And so what I'm attempting to do is put together for you a sort of a string of facts which point to a certain logic being used in interpreting the word taking in 29.039.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Just a few other things. The definition of game may well be internally ambiguous in the manner that Justice Bradley points out, insofar as even today, reasonable minds appear to have had some confusion, perhaps to have differed over whether the term wild applies to mammals or birds or both. And similarly with game and non-game, we have to look at the entire context, and if we do look at the entire context, we submit that reasonable minds very well might differ. There is a tension. There is a tension between .014, the delegation of authority, and .039. And that has to be resolved, in our view, and it should be resolved by finding that .039 on non-game species is a more specific delegation of authority, and under the rules of statutory construction, that more specific delegation of authority should govern over a more general delegation of authority, which is 29.014. We believe that the Court of Appeals analysis falls short on that particular point, and that if the Court of Appeals had more rigorously applied that rule of the specific grant governing over the general grant, that the outcome would have been different.
How can you reconcile your definition of the term take or taking with the use of that word in the endangered and protected species part of the code?
Well, our
uses it to encompass hunting.
Well, but in,
I mean, if your definition is adopted, then hunting of endangered and protected species is allowed. If the narrow definition of taking that you're offering here is adopted, and I don't think that's what you want to be arguing. Perhaps it is.
Well, no, I think it's not. But I would answer that by saying that we have struggled to harmonize all of Chapter 29, and it's inescapable the conclusion that the legislature has sort of mixed and matched its terms all throughout Chapter 29, perhaps been somewhat careless in how it's used these terms throughout Chapter 29. And we can't reconcile all of that. It almost begs for a more comprehensive revision and a more consistent use of terminology. That's how I would respond to it.
What does the term harvest mean?
Well, I don't know what the term harvest means. It certainly suggests to me that it means... I don't know what it means. It suggests to me, and I mean, to me it connotes something other than killing, because we have a specific definition of hunting, which includes specifically killing. I don't have a good answer for you. It's a fair question, but...
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I wish to thank all counsel, Mrs. Feather, Mr. Peterson, and Ms. Hannon for the excellent arguments that they have made this morning. And with that, we end our hearing on 02-1166, Wisconsin Citizens Concerned Cranes and Doves versus the DNR et al. The court will take a short recess so that these students may leave and other students are welcome. And then the students will return at the end of the argument and meet with Justice Vilgensack. We're in recess for a few moments.